I'm going to start today's presentation by showing you some images and hopefully some music. And the idea is really to give you a bit of an overview of a creative Scotland. And when the soundman gets the music up. It was great fun, actually. I've just been backstage, and sorry for the slight delay in getting everybody in, but there's been a show in here this afternoon with a whole load of shadow puppets. And I did wonder whether I could do the whole gig with these props that are backstage. And there's some quite amusing props there, but so I decided not. We'll go with this presentation. But the idea behind these images is just to give you a sense of the overview of creativity in Scotland. I've had the privilege of spending most of the last year seeing work across Scotland, as well as doing some work in the office. I've seen about 150 cultural projects, visited well over a couple of hundred artists and cultural organisations now. And I've seen some of the best work that I've seen in 30 years in my professional career. And one of the things that I reflect on is that Scotland probably hasn't been very good at celebrating its success and telling the stories of what it's got culturally. So if Creative Scotland's going to do anything that's different from its predecessors, it's about actually showing the images, telling the stories, packaging together everything that's good about the creative sector in Scotland. I started last year going to events like the Imaginate Festival, amazing children and young people's festival. Huge highlights in the summer, watching the Made in Scotland programme at the Edinburgh Fringe, where we had over 15 organisations, some of the best work produced from across Scotland, and now many of those shows going on export internationally. I've seen some amazing, inspiring communities projects, work in prisons, work with under fives, the amazing Matthew Bourne project, Lord of the Flies, with 170 lads from Weston Barton dancing here at the Glasgow Theatre Royal. I went to the Dumfries Film Festival and saw a young filmmaker called Nathan Alakaru, who made a 15-minute short, a sort of high school musical meets the Xbox Zombies. He's just won a BAFTA award, and he's one of five artists that I'm following and seeing if Creative Scotland makes a difference to them over the next 5 years. And he's certainly someone that's going places. I've seen films like The Illusionist, Skeletons, the work by Diversity Films, working with refugees here in Glasgow. I've seen dance from Scottish Dance Theatre, Plan B, Private Dancer, amazing project here in Glasgow at the Tramway in the workspace, working with performers aged literally from 1 to 83, and if I'm still as supple as that at the age of 83, I'll be delighted. I've seen theatre here at the Glasgow Sits, at the Tron, at the Traverse, work by companies like Dogstar, Mull Theatre, amazing performances within the Fringe Festival, and then probably one of the highlights, the National Theatre of Scotland's production of Extreme in Aberdeen a few weeks ago, a major community project where they've been resident for 9 months. I've seen youth choirs, youth theatres, youth orchestras. Been to amazing places. Probably one of the highlights is Huntley in Aberdeenshire. For those of you that haven't been, Huntley doesn't have an arts venue. The town is the venue. And through a series of artist residencies, each artist that's been there has left behind a piece of music, a piece of art, a piece of conceptual work that creates a town trail. It really is a kind of world-class project that could put Huntley on an international map. I've seen artist residencies at St. Magnus Festival, at Cove Park, at Salma Rostig, the Gaelic College on Skye, and found out that we have over 57 artist residencies in Scotland happening already. We've just added another 150 to those to make it 200 Creative Futures residencies in Scotland. I've seen some inspiring buildings, the Peer Arts Centre, the Brigate here in Glasgow, yet to be built, but still inspiring. At Spears Lock, the Whiskey Bond building, which the Sculpture Workshop will hopefully move into. Findhorn and the Moray Arts Centre. Just amazing places, amazing buildings. Print studios in Aberdeen, in Inverness, in Edinburgh, and here in Glasgow. And amazing artists, the Spring Fling in Dumfries and Galloway. Rachel Somani, a real star from the Highlands, featured in Showcase Scotland at Celtic Connections. Nicola Benedetti performing the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. And I've seen some absolutely inspiring work that's engaging with communities. the Raplock Sistema Orchestra in Stirling performed just a couple of weekends ago here in Glasgow with the BBC. Just amazing to see the long-term plan for that project, working in one of Scotland's most difficult housing estates and building an orchestra for the future. The Inspiring Communities project with Motherwell College worked with five Scottish prisons. With this organisation, Glasgow Sits, the Traverse and National Companies and National Galleries, and producing really valuable evidence about the power of culture in affecting people's behaviour and changing lives. And if that can prove that we are changing the patterns of reoffending, a very powerful argument will be made for investing in that sector. So I've had this amazing overview and been privileged to see all of this. And our job now is to try and reflect on that and to produce a plan that somehow captures everything from Liz Lockhead, the national poet, through to that one-year-old taking part in dance for the first time. I've met exceptional cultural leaders, many of them in this room and far too many to name. And I'm in no doubt that this is a creative nation. And our job is to make it one of the world's most creative nations. And that's what our plan sets out to do. So, what I'm going to talk about today is a creative Scotland. What does it look like? Well, I've just told you, it looks fairly amazing, from games industry in Dundee to inspiring projects in the islands like Shetland and its new venue, Mareel, soon to open. I'm then going to go on and talk about Creative Scotland progress. I'll tell you about the plan, the context of how we set our budget up, our partners that we'll be working with, our investment programmes, and then I'll just give you a flavour of some of the work that's in our intro at the moment and that we're inviting you to engage with us on. So, Creative Scotland and progress. It's a new organisation. We're only 9 months old. We were set up in July. We've got a new board. We've got a new senior team. Venu Dupa, who's pictured here and is in the front row with Caroline Parkinson and Ian Munro, are our three directors of creative development. We've streamlined our staffing. You probably don't realise quite how much. We've gone down from 155 staff at its peak to 89. That's more reduction than was originally intended, and we will be building back to fill some key gaps. But as a result of that, and as a result of our office move, we've now saved £2 million, which will be reinvested back in to the cultural sector. We've opened our new resource base at Waverley Gate in Edinburgh. It's more than an office, it's your space, it's a place to meet. It's a place for events, it's got hot desks, it's already being actively used. And we very much look forward to welcoming people to activate that building. And perhaps our biggest achievement so far is to have maintained our budget amidst the biggest public sector spending cuts in my working career. Set in a context of 10% cuts to the Scottish Government's budget for culture and external relations, to get a standstill budget for Creative Scotland, and then actually to get some growth, because we've got another £2.25 million for our Cashback for Communities programme, was an incredible result. And we obviously got our messaging and tactics right. And that messaging was about being positive. It was about actually talking about the cultural successes in Scotland and not lobbying about the impact of what cuts would deliver. And if I've got one message today, it's work with us to be positive about what's happening here in Scotland, and it's those positive press cuttings that will get onto the politicians' desks. We've been trying to change the culture of an organisation, and I use the phrase looking out of the window. It's very often when you're going through a major restructure, and I've done three, people get very internal and look at themselves. We've been inviting our team to look out of the window, to shift the focus from us and Creative Scotland and all that went before in the consultation of the creation of the organisation, to look outside the window and advocate and champion the valuable cultural work that's going on. We've been doing a lot of work, some of it visible, some of it invisible, positioning Creative Scotland in government, positioning us with the press, positioning us with other agencies. Lots of one-to-one meetings with senior politicians. I'm not supposed to be doing them just at the moment, but I have been to every breakfast briefing of every party leader in the election campaign, including Alex Salmond this morning. That's really important work that's kind of positioning the cultural sector for the future. We've, as an organisation, we inherited a lot of commitments, but we decided to do a few things very quickly, and our board agreed to put aside some money to package some things in the way that Creative Scotland will work in the future. And this year we've launched the Creative Futures Residency Programme. The idea is to have up to 200 residencies or artists' awards and bursaries a year, which will become an alumni over a period of time of about 2,000 artists that will have been through a significant residency programme in Scotland. We've put aside an additional £1 million for film investment, and we've produced this, the Scottish Festivals Guide. I arrived in Scotland, I was running festivals and events just an hour across the border in Newcastle Gates there, and I probably knew about 8 or 9 festivals in Scotland. And I arrived and asked for a list of festivals. I thought it would be quite good, put a few in the diary. I got a list of 38 festivals, and in my first week I went to 3 that weren't on the list. So I came back and said, surely, you know, we've got to be able to get the list of Scottish festivals. And then we bumped into the list, and the list worked with us and have produced this initial guide to Scottish festivals. 280 of them, 40 literature festivals, 150 music festivals, 75 festivals in the winter months. This is one of the most powerful pieces of print that we could have produced, because it shows that everywhere in Scotland has got a contribution to make, and that culture is making a contribution to communities, to economies, to cultural tourism, and to the branding of Scotland. And when I stood up last night, an event in Aberdeen with over 150 international tour operators looking to book package tours from China and India and the USA and Canada, and was able to show them the video of Scottish festivals and to hand them this leaflet, you suddenly realise that there's something other than golf and whisky that we can promote about Scotland. We've been doing increased showcasing. The Made in Scotland programme at The Fringe showcased Scotland at Celtic Connections. We've been to the Venice Architectural Biennale for the first time, and this year, again, we'll be at the Venice Biennale. We brought IETM, the International Theatre Conference, to Glasgow, profiling over 30 companies here in the city. And we've been profiling some of those inspiring communities projects. But a lot of what we've been doing has been about preparing the ground. We've started a review of our foundation organisations, really valuable organisations, including this one here, that provide a lot of the bedrock for cultural production in Scotland. Part of our message in securing our funding was we want to build on strong foundations, not just these organisations, but the work that's in place across Scotland. We've started some work scoping an economic impact study, because it's really important that we've got the figures that can prove the case for new resources. We've done some mapping of international partnerships, and we've put in place some significant partnerships with broadcasters, with STV, with MG Alba, with Channel 4, with Sky Arts, and with the BBC. And the scale of the partnership with the BBC really could be very significant. We've already got a member of staff seconded part-time now into the BBC, and looking at the relationships between Creative Scotland in film, in drama, in festivals, in online, in education, in places, and how we can work together collaboratively over the next 3 years. We've been securing some new partnerships with the Paul Hamlin Foundation, a £300,000 programme around artist training, with the Baring Foundation, a 3-year programme investing in arts and older people, which will produce the 381st festival in Scotland, a festival about creative ageing. And we've been doing work in the creative industries with other partners like Scottish Enterprise, Scottish Funding Council, looking at how we can get other partners behind the creative industries sector. And we've also been doing work with Learning and Teaching Scotland to produce the Education, the Arts, Creativity Action Plan, building on the GLOW network, which takes work into all our schools and about 110 cultural organisations now producing live content into that network, and looking at issues around artist training and capacity to engage in schools. And this picture was linked to the Baring Foundation. I picked this picture up actually in Inverness on Monday, and I just couldn't resist putting it in. It's actually Inverness Print Studios, and was one of their workshop programmes. I just thought it was fantastic. Arts and Older People is going to be one of our priorities, and I'll touch on that later, because an awful lot of this population is going to be old, myself included. Over 50% of the population will be over 50 within the next 6 years, so this is a very important sector for us to work with. So, a bit about the plan. We've given you a copy today. We released the plan a couple of weeks ago and had an amazing initial response. I'll give you some of the comments later. But we were required to produce a three-year plan. But my premise is that Creative Scotland should be about the long term, and it should be about a rallying call. And if you're going to get people behind something, it needs to have a big enough vision and a long enough time frame to do things that are transformational in terms of generations, transformational in terms of places, transformational in terms of the positioning of culture in Scotland. So we framed our three-year plan in a 10-year vision, a set of aspirations, and we genuinely want to see if they are the right aspirations and are consulting you on this, because if they're not, we've got 10 years and we can change them. But the key thing is, are the things that people can sign up to, people can get behind, people can think that's ambitious. We've moved from having over 100 separate budgets to 15 investment programmes, and we've made a fundamental shift in how we think from being a funding body to an investment agency. We'll use the word invest because it's about investing time, investing energy, as well as investing money in projects. And if you look at the definition of invest, it's about spending time on something that's worthwhile. And we think everything that we get involved in should be worthwhile, and invest is a much more positive word than subsidy. So I'm not going to go through it all, but I wanted to give you a flavour from the plan of some of those 10-year aspirational statements about making Scotland a year-round festival destination recognised as one of the top 10 places in the world for culture. Somebody in Glasgow, I won't name them, said to me that Glasgow is closed for tourism except between May and September, and I'm stood there looking at the Celtic Connections Festival, and I'm looking at my festival guide, which has got iWrite and festivals dotted throughout the year. We are a year-round festival destination, and we really need to build on that and tell those messages. We've got a 10-year aspiration to have the highest levels of participation in the arts in the UK, with creativity reaching into every home. That's why broadcasters are going to be really important to us. Online and digital content and TV content going into homes, critically important. We've got an aspiration to be a leader in the arts for children and young people. We're already a very significant player in this field. Things like the Youth Music Initiative, now been running for 7 years. The National Youth Orchestra, National Youth Choirs, National Youth Theatre. The work of our children's theatre companies, people like Catherine Wheels, who are touring around the globe with work, Visible Fictions. So our objectives are fairly simple. Some of you will have heard me use these before or float them. I was testing them in earlier speeches. We're going to invest in talent, we're going to invest in quality production, we're going to invest in audiences, access and participation, we're going to invest in the cultural economy, and we're going to invest in places. And probably the new language in here is places, and that's because we think that every place in Scotland has a role to play in a creative nation, and that actually places can be the thing that combine creativity in communities. We've also got three cross-cutting themes, international work, equalities and education, and we'll not apply those to every project or every organisation, but we want to be strong in all of these areas. One of the biggest areas that we debated in our board was the values and the principles of running Creative Scotland. And Gail McPherson is one of our board members at the back, is smiling, I can see now. Getting these words right for how you describe the organisation. We're not going to be an institution. We're not going to be a bureaucracy. We're not going to be a funding body. We are going to be passionate. We are going to be creative ourselves. We're going to be very committed to access, diversity and equality. And probably one of the most important statements in here is that pride at being rooted in Scotland, but being very global in our outlook. We will celebrate international connections, whether that's work being exported, whether that's inviting the world into Scotland through culture, or whether that's international collaboration. And we're determined to be distinctive, bold, and to value risk. And probably that statement took the longest debate in the board. We need to be taking risks ourselves. We need to be enabling other people to take risks and accepting that some things won't work, but the more risks you take, the more likely we're going to be a creative nation. And I can tell you lots of anecdotes about taking risks. I've taken quite a few in my life, and I'm determined to take quite a lot more here in Scotland. To deliver that, we need to have some operating principles. And this, again, is probably one of the most important messages I want to get across in this roadshow. There's always a lot of debate about whether Arts Council's cultural agencies are there to serve the artists and filmmakers, or whether they're there to serve the audience and public. We are very clear. We will be driven by commitment to deliver for the people of Scotland. That is what we get our investment for, and that's the focus of our work. However, artists and creative practitioners will be absolutely central to our thinking and part of the team in delivering that, but very much about delivering to the people of Scotland. We're going to be collaborative and work in partnership, not all the times. Sometimes it's quicker to just get on with something and do it yourself to get it done quickly. But where we can find someone else to collaborate with, to work with us in partnership, we will. And often we'll encourage people to do things on our behalf and to devolve things. We want to provide leadership, not just from ourselves, to be leading from the front and to be up there and positioning Creative Scotland as a player and a commentator on things in Scotland, but to actually give people leadership in the sector and to mandate people to get on and be spokespeople for a Creative Scotland and to be champions for what we're doing. We want to take robust decisions. We don't want to take a lot of time taking decisions. We want to take decisions fairly and as swiftly as we can. But we want to minimise bureaucracy and to change some of the processes that have been there in the past. That will take us a bit of time to bed down and to test. But as you'll see later, we've got a very different approach to our investment models and a very different approach to how we want to engage with people. And we're going to invest in our staff and specialist advice because they're the people that will help promote and advocate for Scotland's cultural development. Our staff are one of our greatest assets. We've reduced our operating costs, but I feel very proud of the teams we've put together. We're going to add some expertise to that, but they are a huge resource. It's not just about money, it's about advice and advocacy. So, I'm not going to go into huge detail, but I wanted to unpack some of the thinking behind some of our objectives. And the first one is to invest in talent. And I'm enormously grateful to theatre company Plan B, Frank McConnell, who produced this map when they performed at the Edinburgh Fringe with their show We Home From Home. And instead of a programme that said so-and-so had performed five times in Taggart and, you know, started his career at the Dundee Rep, they produced this, and I'm sorry you can't see it very well from there. We've got a slight projection problem because the children's show behind had shadow puppets on that screen. But what this shows is the career paths of four performers, a designer and a director. And the moment I saw it, I realised that this would be a really powerful image to describe the role of Creative Scotland and of our work. Because what it shows is that our job is to get people engaged in cultural sector, perhaps in education, participation, to get them onto that first step of their career and onto the track, and to identify the platforms and the key stations where talent is added and where they grow and where they flourish in their careers, to allow them to go off on international tracks. If you could see the detail, someone here went to Southport, someone else went to Milan. To allow people to work outside of Scotland, but also to bring them back at the peak of their career so that we're getting the best of our artists and creative practitioners giving back into a cultural community in Scotland. And this works for anything. It works for film, it works for literature, it works for any sector that you want to look at. And we'll talk a lot about the cultural ecology, and this map will help describe it. And when I stood up in Scottish Parliament in front of 20 MSPs without the image and just described it and told them the story, they absolutely got it. So this is an image which will come back again and again and again, hopefully with some of your names on, hopefully with some illustrations of how other sectors can develop. In terms of investing in talent, we want to invest at the start of people's careers, at the peak of people's careers, but also to find out where those talent hubs are, which are the organisations and agencies that are real drivers of talent, that are bringing new companies forward, are supporting new writers, are supporting new film directors. Where are the agencies that are delivering that? And we want to enable them to flourish. So, quality artistic production. We do a lot of this. This is where a lot of our budget is spent. It's where a lot of the cultural sector is engaged. And we've got a very rich cultural production scene. We've got strengths in some areas and weaknesses in others. And in the plan, we've been fairly open. We didn't use strengths and weaknesses. We said areas that are really successful, areas that are developing, and areas that need improvement. But we have been quite open, if you read between the lines, that some sectors, some aspects of theatre, for example, we're really strong in, other aspects we're not. Some sectors, like music, we've got great strengths in. Other sectors, like film and TV, we're under-investing in. And so we had to provide that analysis as a base for looking at quality production. Audiences, access and participation, a massive area to engage with. But the good news is Scotland has very high levels of audience engagement and audience participation already. The bad news is it's not every community, it's not every age range, and it's not every part of the country. And we've got to look at the statistics and what it's telling us about arts and older people, about reaching communities in disadvantaged areas of our urban landscapes and reaching rural communities. And we've also got to have a more coherent plan about how we plant engagement with the cultural sector, with under fives, and take it through different sectors to join up essentially the different programmes that we've run. Cultural economy. Everybody was a bit fearful. You know, Creative Scotland was all going to be about the economy. It's all going to be about creative industries and lots of money. Yeah, we are going to do creative industries. But the cultural economy is, I think, going to become a phrase that gets used more and more. If you read the election manifestos, there's a lot of reference to jobs, 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 the economy, growth, cultural tourism. The economy is very important. We've been born at a time when the economy is in the spotlight. And our job is really to understand how we can grow sectors like the music industry, how we can grow the film and TV sector, how we can work with the games and digital and computer animation sectors to grow on our strengths in Scotland and to address some weaknesses. And finally, places and their contribution to Creative Scotland. Our premise is that every place has got something to contribute, and we're going to work with four or five local authority areas each year in some depth to unpack what their contribution is to Scotland, maybe to tackle an issue or a difficulty, but often to work on something that really defines the role that they play. And this is Dumfries and Galloway. This was day two of my life in Scotland, and we had a conversation over lunch over about 30 minutes with some artists, councillors and others, and started to define what it was that Dumfries and Galloway offered to Scotland. Because geography matters. If we're committed to the people of Scotland, the people live across the whole of Scotland. And we need to be very open and transparent about where we are delivering and where we're not. And we've put this map in the plan, a bit dangerous, because it shows the density of our investments through foundation organisations and what we call flexibly funded organisations across the country. This is 110 organisations. And what it shows is we have a huge concentration here in Glasgow, a very strong production base. We have a huge concentration in Edinburgh, a very strong festivals presentation base. We're actually doing quite well in the Highlands and Islands in terms of density. But there are huge tracts of Scotland, the borders, Dumfries and Galloway, areas around the urban fringes of Glasgow, where we've relatively little cultural infrastructure in place. And we're determined to do something about that, not to spread things too thinly, but to, through our plans in the future, to find out how we can grow strengths in some of these other areas. Now on to our budget and a few principles of our budget. We're going for fewer, more strategic budgets. We're trying to plan over 3 years. We only have a one-year commitment from the government at the moment, as does everybody else. But we've done projections for what it might look like in the future. We've tried to create clarity between the lottery funding and the Treasury funding. There will be no single art form budgets apart from film and TV. Everything will be cross art form. We're trying to be transparent to give people clarity about our budgets. And we're going to test new ways of investing, not straight away. We're not going to suddenly move all our money away from grants to loans or anything like that. Most of our funding will be grants. But we are going to test things like crowdsourced online funding. We are going to test loans. We are going to test annuities, different ways of working with money to make our cultural organisations more sustainable. More of our grant programmes will be open access. Fewer of them will have deadlines. And where possible, we're going to devolve the money to others to look after, because we don't want to silt up or be seen to be that cash machine or funding agency. We want to be developing and going out and searching new sources of resources. You can't really see that from here, but actually you don't need to, because what this is a visual picture of our budget. And we started as a senior team and had to work on a budget that would convince the government to give us a good settlement and would look very different and be very transparent in terms of how we invested our money in the future. In the purple section is our core grant from the government, £35.5 million. And £18.2 million was spent on our foundation organisations, and we're very proud of them. They do great work. £7 million is spent on our flexibly funded organisations, and there's about another million that's spent on cross-cutting network national agencies, people like VAGA, Engage, Federation of Scottish Theatres, umbrella agencies, Arts and Business. And once you take all of that out, and our operating costs of the organisation, even after we've saved £2 million, there's only really about £3.5 million left. And what was happening in the past was that Scottish Arts Council, in particular, was trying to use this little bit of money to do everything. It was doing a bit of talent, a bit of access, a bit of support for touring, a bit of production. And so the government was seeing this and thinking, oh, we're getting quite a lot for this money. Our tactic is very different. We're separating all of that out. We've just focused this budget on two areas, on talent, investing in individual talent and skills, and on international work. And those are the two areas that's quite difficult to work on in lottery, so we've done that in Treasury. And what that enables us to do is to show, in terms of our bids for future funding, that this is what we buy at the moment with our core Treasury money. The government then gives us additional money for specific purposes, £10 million for Youth Music Initiative, very welcome, £2 million for the Edinburgh Expo Fund, which includes the Made in Scotland programme, benefits the whole of Scotland, and various other bits of money. But the really interesting area is the blue, and this is the lottery. Now, over time, in the purple, we're going to change that pattern, and we're going to move away from the flexibly funded organisations and into something called strategic commissioning, and I'm sure I'll get my first question will be about that, I'm sure, when we get to questions. But in the lottery, we've been able to plan from pretty much a clean slate. And what we've tried to do is to build up budgets here over 3 years. And that's what our Treasury funding looks like. But this is what lottery funding looks like. We're very fortunate. The lottery income is going up. This year it was about 18 million. Next year it's going to be nearly 20 million. This year, we'll just come into, is 20 million. By the end of the three-year plan, we'll be somewhere between 27 and 28 million pounds of lottery income. That's because more people are spending money on lottery tickets in the recession. The Olympics money is coming back to the good causes, and the UK government's reinstated the share for the arts when the lottery was originally set up. So we've been able to plan with some very significant growth, I mean £10 million growth over 3 years. And so what that's enabled us to do is to build quite dynamic budgets that don't just look at 1 year, but look at 3-4 years ahead. A new fund for quality production in film and TV. Scottish Screen had a budget of £2.1 million for all its film production and exhibition activity. We've taken the exhibition activity elsewhere, but we'll now have a budget of £3 million this year for film and TV investment, growing to £3.75 million by year three of the plan. A massive shift in that budget. Budgets for quality production, for touring, exhibition and events. A budget for strategic development of cultural economy, looking at the sustainability of cultural organisations, looking at how we better use IT, new technology, looking at environmental sustainability of our cultural organisations, and looking at mergers, collaborations, new sources of finance, new ways of making our organisations more sustainable. We've built a capital programme, we've reintroduced a capital programme of £20 million spread over 4 years. We'll only spend £1 million this year because we're saving money up so that we've got more to spend on a significant programme of projects. There'll be a particular emphasis in that on artist-led projects. There's probably going to be an emphasis on youth arts projects within there. And it's everything from kind of small equipment to hopefully some major new cultural facilities that fill major gaps on the map. And the final area that I wanted to touch on was 2012, Cultural Olympiad and Creative Scotland Year, and then 2014, the National Cultural Programme for the Commonwealth Games, which we are charged with delivering and delivering the legacy of. Those will be very significant programmes, each of them about £6 million, where we put out invites for people to come forward with ideas that really celebrate a creative nation in those two specific years. So that's more or less all on the budget, so we'll run through them again at the very end. A word about our partners. If you could read this, it really is very complex. What we've tried to do on here is to kind of reflect to you and to our partners the wide range of organisations that we work with. We work with education sector, with government agencies, with 32 local authorities, with enterprise agencies, development agencies, university sector. We work with national cultural partners. We work with the national companies, although we don't fund them. We're doing lots of partnership projects and already are. We work with international partners, with film and media partners, including the press and media, who are critically important, I believe, in building that rallying call. But right at the heart of this, in Creative Scotland, are the cultural organisations, creative enterprises and individual artists. And we're going to try and find a way that we show how we engage with all these different agencies so that it becomes very transparent about who we're working with, on what, and why. So I'll finish with a few slides on work in progress. We've drafted a brief for a youth arts review. The outgoing government asked us to deliver a youth arts review. We've kept the brief in draft and we'll bring it out after the elections and hopefully start a process of looking at youth arts. Again, this is something that is very important in all the political manifestos. You may hear more news on this tomorrow. Youth arts is really an area that Creative Scotland is going to be majoring on, and we want to work with all of you that are involved in that sector in some way to look at this review. We're going to do that economic impact study so we can say what the cultural impact is on the Isle of Orkney, what the cultural impact is across different sectors. There's been some very good work done here in Glasgow, there's been some very good work done by the Edinburgh Festivals looking at economic impact, but nobody has got the total picture of the economic impact of the cultural sector. We've working with various cultural organisations on the National Gaelic Arts Strategy, and we've done a piece of work on new investment models, which we'll share relatively soon. It's a sort of discussion document about how we might enter into to different ways of investing. And we're very busy at the moment completing our staff team. Although we've gone down to 89, our target was to get down to 111. We're going to build back to about 99 or 100 people. And we've got some key gaps to fill in theatre, creative industries, film, communications and research. And then our website, we put a bit of a holding website up because we had to very quickly. And because of tendering, we couldn't do our full website until we'd gone through a full tendering process. But we've now appointed a company called Agate who are working with us to develop what I hope will be a really special website presence for Creative Scotland by October. Though it's quite interesting, our existing website is getting absolutely massive traffic and is already kind of posting a lot of traffic through to people that we signpost through Facebook posts and other things already. So the kind of Creative Scotland brand is already building. Some next steps. We say in the plan that we're going to review a number of sectors. If we're going to produce the map for theatre, we need to understand the whole cultural ecology for theatre, from the national company to amateur theatre to youth theatre to professional producing theatre to touring to training. We need to understand what's going on. And the same for music and dance, visual arts and crafts. We've tasked ourselves to do quite a lot in the first year so that we can start to make some changes in years two and three. Once we've done those reviews, we'll start doing what we call strategic commissioning. And this is about being more specific about what we want to build in Scotland, to open ourselves up to identifying key areas that we have as strengths that we want to see more of, and key gaps that we want to fill. And I'll happily answer questions on that later. We're also introducing a new grant system. This will take us a bit of time. It'll be a bit clunky to begin with, but we aim to make it easier for you and easier for us. And a new area that we're introducing is something that might ultimately end up as a grant or an investment, but an ideas bank. We want people to come to us with our ideas, to reflect on the plan, to reflect on some of the ambitions of what we're saying, and to put forward an idea that we can debate and discuss, share and come back, and maybe suggest other partners that you might work with, maybe suggest a route through if it's a good idea that we could invest in it or take it further. And we hope to open up that ideas bank in May. And the idea is that people just submit an idea. I'm getting them every day already on emails, but please don't send them all to me. There will be a route in. That once we get those ideas, we'll have a team of people that look at them every week or every month, and bring in other expertise where we need to look at them, and then come back and respond to them. And some will be, you know, that's completely barking mad, we'll do it. Some will be, that's completely barking mad, go away. Others will be, that's absolutely brilliant, and there are these three other people who have had a similar idea, why don't you get together? Or this is a fantastic idea, we need to get some other partners on board. So that's the sort of approach we want to take. Our investment programmes I've touched on as I've gone through, foundations, flexibly funding, which would be replaced by strategic commissioning, our network agencies, our investment in talent, which includes the Creative Futures programme, a residencies programme where we will open it up to new residency hosts this year, and the Youth Music Initiative continues, a very big part of our budget, £10 million. On the lottery, these are the investment programmes in the lottery, and all of this now is up on the website in headline terms, and it's going to be updated regularly. Do keep looking if you're coming into the investment programmes. Do keep looking because we will change. We're going to be web-based. We're going to be very transparent. We're going to tell you where we spent the money, what's left, what the money that's left will be applied to, and who's taking the decisions. And a key change is that most of those programmes are going to be open all year. There won't be deadlines. There are some where there'll be deadlines, but we want to be kind of open all year. And we're developing a new form. Quite important message is this one of devolution. If I picked up one criticism before I arrived in Scotland, it was this sense that, you know, it's always an individual officer, and if I get the wrong side of the individual officer, I'll never get any support. I think it was wrong. Actually, our officers are very objective. But we are moving to a situation where we devolve more out, and that has a plurality about then who takes decisions. We already devolve awards for all, £500,000 to the big lottery fund. It's good investment because they put money to it as well. And this supports grants under £10,000. And often for a voluntary project, a small project, that is the best route in. It's quite quick process. We'll perhaps try and focus the purposes of that a little bit more in line with our objectives. Start of a six with the Cultural Enterprise Office. We've committed very strongly to the Cultural Enterprise Office, that is a kind of first point contact for creative business development. And we're going to ask them to grow and develop their Start of a Six programme, which is new cultural businesses. We've given our Gaelic Arts Officer in Inverness, it's a partnership with Borden & Gaelic, small development fund to do small startup projects in the Gaelic community. Although he's based in Inverness, he'll work with Gaelic communities across Scotland. And we devolve £8 million of our youth music money to local authorities, so we're very committed to devolution. And Creative Futures, as I mentioned. In a way, Creative Futures is a perfect model of devolution. You know, you devolve to 40 or 50 residency partners, they take the decisions, on what sort of residencies they develop, on which artists they appoint. And so it's really kind of using the expertise of the whole of Scotland. So what's the reaction been to our plan? Well, wait to hear from you later, and as well as questions, we also welcome comments. But I was really pleased. You know, literally within the space of a couple of days, we were getting emails in, messages in, from quite serious players in Scotland. And frankly, I couldn't have written the editorial in the Herald myself. It was almost like getting a 4-star review. Really positive response to the plan. And we've had responses from, you know, people in the private sector who not got anything particularly to do with it, other than they might be on the board of something. We've had responses from within the sector, like some of these. Probably one of my favourites was Bob Last. For those that don't know him, he's a film producer of The Illusionist, and he's the chair of the Cultural Enterprise Office. And his email said, well, a lot of people in Scotland are grumpy, opinionated, and have big egos, and I'm probably one of them. But congratulations, I really welcome the clarity of the plan. So it's great that we've made some converts with the plan. But there will be detractors, there will be people, you know, it doesn't feel right for, we're not saying enough about literature, we don't identify enough specific things for film. We can debate those things. What I hope it provides is a kind of framework for moving Creative Scotland forward. So some final messages. Here to serve the population. Key question we're asking everybody is, how can you contribute to a Creative Scotland? We'll ask that question again of local authorities, of artists, of cultural organisations, of the health service, of the prison service. How can you contribute to a Creative Scotland? Another key message is, this is a 10-year plan and a 3-year plan within it. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You don't have to put your ideas in tomorrow. Think them through. Talk to people about them. Talk to us about them. We want quality ideas and partners, but we don't want things to be rushed. We'd rather have conversations and collaboration than application and rejection. We want you to help us celebrate Scotland's creative achievements, to tell those stories, to package things together a bit better, to improve how we tell those success stories into government, into the press and media, internationally. We really need everybody's help with that. Those images are incredibly powerful. We need more strong images, more strong stories, the stories of the individual whose life has been changed, the story of the artist who's just had some success, the story of the contribution of a project to the economy of a village or a place. And we also want people to go out and raise the ambition. I think Scotland's been very ambitious in a lot of it done, but I think there's some areas where it holds back. And we're all brokers of ambition. We're all people that are out there trying to raise the game. And we want you to be as ambitious as you can in helping us realise the plan. And part of this is kind of putting creativity into the core script of Scotland. I was delighted when Sir Peter Housden, who's the head civil servant in the government, announced that he was going to run a creativity initiative in the government. And they came to see us to talk about how they could do that and how they could inject creativity into the government. It would be fantastic if every agency in Scotland looked at how creativity can be part of their script, because then we really would open a lot of new doors to the cultural sector. Thanks very much for coming along. I've talked for long enough. I'm inviting Caroline Parkinson onto the stage now, who's going to be our quiz master and question master for the day.